Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of the People's History Podcast, brought to you by Oprah Kingston, a student-run group with a focus on research, education, and action on everything related to social and environmental justice. Before we begin, we would like to acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded at CFRC at Queen's University, situated on traditional Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory. It is our collective responsibility to address the systemic oppression that Indigenous people face and contribute to meaningful reconciliation and direct action in support of Indigenous autonomy and rights. The People's History Podcast aims to recognize and preserve the important roles that Kingstonians and Queen's students have played in many social movements throughout the years. The stories of people who participated in struggles for social and environmental justice, queer, Indigenous, Black, anti-racist, feminist, among many others, often go untold in official histories. The PHB seeks to engage with these stories by making accessible the rich history of social movements and resistance in Kingston. So, if you've ever been curious about how Kingston as we know it came to be, you are listening to the right podcast. Today we are throwing it back to 1985, where two seemingly unlikely activism campaigns collided. Kingston's fight to have a gay and lesbian pride day and the campaign for nuclear disarmament joined together to stage a controversial lesbian gay kiss-in on the steps of Kingston City Hall that sparked controversy throughout Kingston. Though we had talked about the fight for Kingston's first ever pride celebrations in our first episode, today we will uncover a different aspect of the same history. August 9th, 1985, marked the 40th anniversary of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombings that claimed nearly 200,000 of lives altogether. Kingstonians joined people all around the world to commemorate the anniversary with a candlelit vigil and by taking part in anniversary campaigns like the International Shadow Project, where the shadows of deceased Japanese citizens are drawn on the streets to commemorate those whose lives were cruelly taken in the bombing. In a response to City Council refusing requests from the queer community to have a gay pride day, as well as refusing requests from nuclear disarmament activists to declare Kingston a nuclear-free zone, these two unlikely groups of Kingston activists joined together to plan a controversial gay and lesbian kiss-in on the steps of City Hall, right on the City Council's doorstep. The idea of a gay and lesbian kiss-in 30 years ago scandalized Kingston. The day before the planned demonstration, the front page of the Whig had an article titled Gay Anti-Nuke Kiss-In Idea Shocks City Mayor, which then shared the perspective of Mayor John Gerritsen and several other city councilors at the time. Their responses ranged from denial about the connection between the kiss-in and the fight for disarmament, with Mayor John Gerritsen saying it is unfortunate that this sad occasion of the anniversary of the atomic bombing should be drawn in comparison with the problems faced by the gay community. Other city councilors either laughed at the idea or insisted they should need permission from council before organizing something like this. Tony Picard, formerly a professor at Queen's University Faculty of Law, now working on other areas of activism, was the organizer of a three-day vigil in McDonald Park and told the Whig that although she was initially hesitant when she first heard of the event, she eventually understood the connection. She characterized the meaning of the event through her explanation below. The development of the male hypermasculine gender role trains men to be combative and competitive and discourages them from being affectionate, while the development of nuclear warfare is just the most obscene manifestation of that tendency. Picard saw the kiss-in for what it really was, which was a statement that the only way to resist the development of nuclear threat is by courageous and outrageous public demonstrations like these. One city councilor who got a taste of the vehement hatred that exists towards homosexuals during the city's Gay Pride Day agreed, telling the Whig that they thought the event was extremely courageous. The prolific event organizer LaChance, previously mentioned in the first episode of the PHP podcast, wanted to use public space to show that both issues need to be on the political agenda, and explained that there is not only a need to disarm, but also to create space for peace. He understood that the kiss-in wasn't going to change the minds of Kingston City councilors, telling the Whig that it would take a lot of education before that happened. Although the kiss-in and ceremony itself lasted only 15 minutes, it attracted over 400 onlookers and it was described as a kiss that reverberated throughout Kingston. The public's responses to the kiss varied from curiosity to outrage. While most of the crowd applauded, the event was not met without backlash. Some chose to show their disapproval by booing, while others objected more aggressively and physically. During LaChance's speech at the beginning of the event, a woman named Rebecca Reed challenged the kiss-in by shouting that there was no connection between disarmament and gays. As the crowd dispersed, Reed continued to shout, with her husband adding that he was surprised there weren't more people yelling at them, and that he'd expected there'd be more church people out there. Following the kiss-in, Reverend C.G. Vodary expressed his opinion on the link between disarmament and the kiss-in in a letter to the editor, saying, "It seems to me that the connection is blatantly obvious. Homosexuals and lesbians kissing each other in public are the products of sick minds and emotions. Disarmament by North America in the face of the ideologies of communist Russia is also the product of sick minds and emotions." Other city council members, like Alderman Bill Jamieson, agreed, referring to the event as a sick-in. The following day, a picture of Philip McDougall and Ford Barker embracing and kissing was featured on the front page of the Whig. The newspaper conducted an informal telephone survey and found that most readers were critical of the photo. In fact, two people were so furious with the picture that they canceled their subscriptions to the paper. In the following days, a number of blatantly homophobic comments and letters to the editor were published in the Whig. One woman told the Whig to stop publishing sordid pictures of society's abnormalities, referring to the picture of the kiss. And another resident wrote to the Whig to commend City Council on their decision not to let the homosexuals have their gay parade. Unlike the Whig, CKWS Television refused to broadcast the kiss entirely. Their executive vice president called the kiss a sensational stunt and accused the gay movement of trying to manipulate the media. A couple of days after the kiss-in, half a dozen gay activists gathered to participate in a workshop on homophobia. According to the Whig, all of the participants said that there was considerable homophobia in the Kingston community, but that the kiss-in provided the opportunity for heterosexual residents to show their support. Organizer LaChance was amazed at the attentive way the crowd had listened to his brief speech, and highlighted that the event sparked discussions as allies tried to understand the trials of other LGBT+ members of the community. Although there was considerable support, LaChance was harassed with abusive telephone calls. Fred Barker, one of the men in the photo, even received death threats. An insensitive editorial cartoon that the Whig published on the day of the kiss-in further demonstrated the hostility shown towards queer people in Kingston. It was a picture of a plane with the words "Enola Gay Pride" written on it. This was alluding to the plane that dropped the first atomic bomb on Japan. The original name was simply the name of the pilot's mother, having nothing to do with homophobia. The political cartoon pictured the plane dropping a bomb called AIDS, reinforcing the common and harmful misconception at the time that gay people were responsible for the AIDS outbreak. One community member wrote a letter to the editor in response to the printing of this cartoon to express her shock and outrage, calling it a narrow-minded, petty jab at an oppressed group, and pointing out that by printing it on the editorial page, the Whig Standard is playing a role in legitimizing this narrow view. Despite the very vocal backlash from bigots, the kiss-in succeeded in creating space for dialogue on both LGBT+ issues and disarmament in Kingston. Organizer LaChance was surprised by the high turnout at the event, contributing a lot of it to the curiosity and wonder of the public. But LaChance believed that curiosity was a healthy sign because it pushes people to uncover information, and that's how one teaches. Cultivating curiosity is how we foster the desire to learn. Since the 80s, Kingston, Canada, and many other parts of the world have seen an increased understanding and acceptance of our LGBT+ peers. After countless initiatives, campaigns, and requests to the city, Kingston queer activists succeeded in convincing the city to hold a gay and lesbian pride, and on June 20th, 1992, Kingston's first pride parade marched through Kingston right till City Hall. The fight for Kingston's Pride Day had a happy ending, but in Kingston and all around the world, we still have a lot more to go in the fight for justice for members of the LGBT+ community, especially those who are racialized or low income. As for the nuclear disarmament campaign, they grew throughout the years in Kingston through the Kingston Peace Council, an organization dedicated to peace and global prosperity, starting with fighting militarization and imperialism in our own backyard. At Oberg Kingston, we have been and will continue to be in solidarity with all oppressed peoples and will continue to fight for peace and justice in our community and around the world. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Oberg Kingston's People History Podcast. If you would like to learn more about Oberg or the People's History Project, or if you are interested in getting involved, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Oberg Kingston and stay up to date. Thanks for listening, and make sure to tune in to our next episode.